It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Hey everybody, Happy New Year. Episode 115 in 2019, coming at you live from the Bay Area studios. In freezing cold San Francisco, California, it's good to be here with you today. Super excited about today's episode. Damian Lupo is on the podcast. It's going to be a fun conversation. We're going to talk about financial freedom, how retirement is a bad thing, and so many more fun topics when it comes to money. It's 2019. It's time to get a fresh start, and that's what we're doing today with this episode, planned this way on purpose. Help us get some perspective on our finances. I know I spent a lot of money for Christmas, and I imagine that you probably did too. So it's time to get things on track, and we're going to talk about that. I always think conversations involving money are good. It's important to learn, and that's really why I do this show, is to have people on and topics that are important and things that we can learn from, and Damian Lupo definitely delivers. Man, I'm excited for the new year. Lots of great episodes and content coming your way in the weeks to come. It's going to be a lot of fun. And thanks again for joining in every single week and listening at your convenience. We really do appreciate it. It means a lot that you choose to support the show and listen. And it's just super legit. It's a lot of fun. Again, you know, even in the fact that we're in episode 115, it's just mind-boggling to me, and never in a million years did I think it would go this far. And I was talking to my friend Eric in the last episode that we did, this kind of a behind-the-scenes sort of thing, and we were just reminiscing about some of the guests that we had and lessons learned in that sort of thing, and it was just kind of cool to look back and go, man, I can't believe we made it this far. But we did, and it's because of you guys, the listeners, that this thing just continues to rock and roll, and the fact that you want to be a part of it every single week is really just, it's the coolest thing in the world, and I love it, and it's an honor to do this for you every week, and thank you so much for being a part of the show. Now, one thing we did in the behind-the-scenes episode is we did a call to action, and if you listen to the show, no matter where you are, definitely email in and let us know. OpenMicGuest@gmail.com. That's open, O-P-E-N, Mike, M-I-C, G-U-E-S-T, OpenMicGuest@gmail, G-M-A-I-L.com, C-O-M, OpenMicGuest@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the show. Give us a shout out. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know where you're listening from, and we'll give you a shout out back. And also, something really cool, too, is if you have a business and you listen, we'll give your business a shout-out as well. That's something that I want to start doing on the show, and we would love to hear from you. So enough of my chitter-chatter. Damian, welcome in. It's good to have you here today, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Host of Transformation Nation, author of Unicornomics and Black Belt Wealth. So many different things. You do a lot. Why don't you start out and just tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into helping people with financial management and helping people get out of debt, all of those sort of things.
So basically, I went out there and did the unconventional, crazy plan, which started after I left college. I dropped out four times. Actually, I got kicked out a couple of times because I set up a bookstore in one of the college campus dorm rooms, and they didn't like that because I put the bookstore out of business. And ultimately, I realized I'm not supposed to be here, went out and read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad about 20 years ago. And I got really excited about doing something different. And that was doing some real estate stuff. So I started going to seminars and buying houses. My first one was on a Visa card. And that's a really dumb idea. Like, I don't recommend taking a cash advance on a Visa to buy a rental house. It's a dumb, dumb thing. But it made sense at 22. So I went out there and I did that. I bought a bunch of houses, ended up with like 150 of them. And I thought I was the coolest person kind of roaming around. And that was cool until 2008 when I lost $20 million. And it was that process of losing it, having to start over, reinventing everything about my life and asking totally different questions. That's where I started asking, okay, what am I doing here? Is it just to make more money or is it to do something else? And I realized there was the more of the purpose of my life was not just more shiny cars, more Ferraris. It was teaching, and it was taking this practical experience, because it's not something I read in a book to teach somebody else. It's actually my life. And my purpose is to break the financial shackles and free people from financial bondage. That's why I'm here. And so that's all the work I do now, is really teaching from experience and giving and really asking better questions, because that's what it's all about with teaching. It's not telling somebody, it's inspiring them to find the answers inside themselves.
If you had it to do all over again, what would you tell yourself now that you wished you would have known back then?
The big thing I will tell everybody, and I tell myself if I could go back in time, is to fail faster, because there's this inborn or ingrained message that we tell ourselves: failing is bad. In school, we're taught if you make a mistake, you know, if you get 50% of your stuff wrong in school, you flunk out. Mm-hmm. And then if you think about the real world, if you make 50% right, which is also 50% wrong, you're a freaking billionaire. Mm-hmm. So what are we afraid of? We're afraid of the judgment. I would tell myself, fail faster, learn faster from the mistakes, because that's where all the juice is. It's those experiences. I think we're too afraid of making mistakes, and everybody's pretending everything is good, and they hesitate, and so they basically don't grow.
Yeah, I think that's very true. You know, we are afraid of failure, and I'm 44, soon to be 45, and I got a late start on life as far as having a kid and that sort of thing. So, you know, my parents tried their best to teach me how to prepare financially and get things going and that sort of thing. Some of it stuck and some of it didn't. But one of the biggest things that my dad really tried to emphasize was retirement. And, you know, you got to save, do a 401k, do a CD and that sort of thing. So what are your thoughts on retirement? I know you definitely have some perspectives on that. I'd like you to share those with our audience, because I find them interesting and I agree with them. And it's definitely a different way to think.
Well, In general, I think retirement is a terrible idea that we've been hammered into believing is what we're supposed to do. And it's an industrial age idea. People retired just like a farm animal was retired or equipment was too old. Well, if the farm animal was done, you basically took him out in the back and you shot the thing. So, I mean, we're taking these old ideas and we're applying them to people. And the problem with this is that, one, when you're waiting to actually live, when you retire, you get to live, then you're basically waiting your whole life to actually have the experience of living. And the other thing is, when you get to that point where you stop contributing, it's a death sentence. I mean, that's what you're really bringing on. The average male in the United States lasts less than 3 years after they quote unquote retire. So the idea of retiring, I think, is a stupid idea. We've got decades of experience and then all of a sudden we're going to stop. So my idea of retiring, when people say I'm going to retire, is they stop contributing. I'm not talking about going from one job to something, maybe something you really love and you feel like that's your purpose or there's a shift. I'm talking about saying I'm going to golf or I'm going to hang out on a beach and that's going to be my new thing. Trust me, it's going to be short-lived. I tried retiring in my 20s and it was terrible, because you're not here just to consume, you're here to contribute. And a lot of times the idea of retirement is, okay, if I save up enough money, then everything's good. And by the way, Brett, the idea of saving up enough money to be good, to be safe, is never going to work. I mean, I have people coming to me frequently that have $2, $3, $4, $5 million, and they're our age, in their 40s, sometimes in their 50s, and they go, I don't know what to do. I'm scared I'm going to run out of money. Even if they're not saying they're scared they're going to run out, that's what's in our brain, because the problem is we don't have the ability to go spend 20 or 30 years recreating this pile of money. And a lot of times that's in mutual funds. So we're playing not to lose. And if you play not to lose, you know what the outcome is. We've seen sports teams where they play not to lose and they lose.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. You know, I guess the biggest question would be, well, how much is enough to save for retirement? That's really what you have to look at, right?
And the reality is there's no number that's going to be enough when you save it up. Like, you know, most people would say, man, if I had 2 million or if I had 5 million, I'd be good. You wouldn't be. If you have I have a friend that literally had $100 million before he was 30 and he ran out of it. He's 55 years old right now. $100 million was spent. So it's not about the pile of cash. It's about the ability. So financial freedom is not a certain number. It's not a number of zeros in your bank account. It's the confidence in your ability to create, and it's to create additional cash flow that you can spend. Because if you're spending down this pile of cash or this mutual fund portfolio or whatever it is, you're always going to be afraid of running out, and you've got to have something that continues to feed you. And if you've got that, then you're actually going to be free, especially if you believe in your ability to recreate it, assuming it ever was lost. And that's a big problem that we're facing now, that we're going to have markets that are going to cycle. And when people lose their portfolios or they get cut in half, like in 2008, they panic because they have no idea how they recreate that. They don't have any actual skills. A pile of money in a bank account is not a skill set. A pile of money is basically just a lottery event. You happen to do something right 5 or 10 or 20 years ago, but what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. It means that you get to congratulate yourself, but what are you going to do when the market corrects and you're down 50%? You're going to feel like a big dummy.
So that actually brings me to another question that's kind of related, but my brain works that way. So a lot of these celebrities, you know, Forbes 500, wealthy, you know, you can go on to the internet and look at people's net worth. What does that actually mean? So let's say a particular celebrity, it's reported that their net worth is like $20 million. Is that actually liquid asset, or is that more of just like stocks and bonds, maybe cars, maybe houses that they have? How does that work?
So net worth is basically worthless. I mean, it's an interesting number, but it's kind of like saying my business did $5 million last year. That doesn't mean anything if your profit was $12. I mean, you can't, you know, who cares? The top is the ego number. Net worth is the ego number. Liquidity is what's important, as well as cash flow and net earnings. So when you see people like a Kardashian that has this net worth, that, you know, you look at companies that a lot of these people have their net worths tied to, and they're basically smoke, meaning you've got shares in a company. Well, that company can go from zero to a billion and back to zero. And so your net worth is all over the place. Can you eat net worth? No. Can you drive net worth? You can't do any of that stuff. So what is the point of net worth? It's to give us a way to keep score of our progress. But the problem is, it's not an actual application for your real world. Real world is, how much cash flow do you have coming in? What assets are feeding you? Because you can have a billion-dollar net worth and starve to death. And that is a huge problem that a lot of people have. But they say, oh, the Forbes 400, they must be really successful. Yeah. Have you seen some of their overhead? It's called inverse cash flow. It means all the cash is going out. Like these people with these giant houses. And I remember Shaquille O'Neal was making like $20 million a year. And you know what? He was basically broke. I mean, the guy had like seven houses, and he was running, I don't know if he had seven wives, but he had seven houses all over the country. And these were not little houses. These were big houses that ate him. They ate every day. They ate his cash. So after taxes and his houses, the guy didn't have that much left. And so Mike Tyson, another example, made $400 million bankrupt. So what are they doing? They're not building anything sustainable. It's about building assets that will continue to pay you. Even if you don't get up in the morning, you just keep sleeping and they're still paying you.
So we're talking about investments, right? That's really what the biggest thing is. So traditionally, entrepreneurs are great as far as finding businesses and investing, but statistically, they're not super great when it comes to investing. Why is that, do you think?
There's a totally different skill set around creating stuff as an entrepreneur. As an entrepreneur, you tend to make way bigger risks. You might roll the dice all, you know, put all in and go all out. With investing, that is the dumbest thing ever. When you are actually investing and you're thinking about the rational returns and things, most people aren't built to be venture capitalists. They're not looking for a 10x, meaning you make 10 times your money in 5 years. That's not what a rational investor does. A rational investor says, okay, where are we at in the cycle? What's my percentage of my portfolio that's going to go into this thing? An entrepreneur, you literally can spend all your time and all your money launching something. And if it fails, you go do it again. That's a different skill set. It's doing the same thing in investing is crazy. Mm-hmm. Where you go, it's like being at the casino and you go, great, this is working. I'm going to throw all of my chips onto red again because it worked last time. That's a dumb way to invest, but that's how most people are. In fact, you might be listening thinking, well, no, I'm diversified. I got a bunch of different stocks and mutual funds. No, you're all in the stock market. You're all on red. And that is a very, very foolish approach to investing. I know Wall Street tells you differently. They say, hey, just keep your money in for the long term. You know why? Because they get fees every day. They eat you. And it is not a smart move to have all your stuff in a system that you can't control and you really don't understand.
So speaking of investing, for those listening who are maybe wanting to start, or what is a good age to start investing? If you're a parent, should you start for your kids? What are some good practical tools that we can use to begin that process now?
The age to start is, I mean, literally the moment you're alive. So if you're a parent right now and you have kids, yeah, get something started for them. There's some really cool things that are out there that a lot of people don't take advantage of, things like Roth investing accounts. And people might think, oh yeah, a Roth IRA. Not really. There's other stuff that you can do with Roth. And this is the reason we're talking about Roth to start off with, is it's because you can set this up for kids and have them growing something that they can actually pull out even when they're 18 or 20. It's not necessarily stuck until they're 60. So starting off with that, but even before that, it's an understanding of money and investing. My friend Robert Kiyosaki teaches this better than anybody in the history of the world, the history of history. I mean, if you want to understand money and investing, read his first three books. Read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cashflow Quadrant, and Rich Dad's Guide to Investing. Those three books will set the foundation for what is really true about money and what your thinking is doing to your actual results. I think if you don't start there, you're probably just rolling the dice and listening to whoever's popular in the media at the moment.
So the days of CDs and those types of things are kind of a thing of the past, maybe? Or Roth IRAs and Roth investments are sort of the way to go now?
Well, so CDs were an interesting thing in the 50s and 60s, maybe even in the 70s when we had inflation rates in the double digits, because you put your money into a bank and you get 12 or 13% on it. Now you put your money into a CD and you're going to get 1% or 2%. This is a dumb idea. I mean, you're literally going to be losing your purchasing power because the dollars are being printed faster than you're making money on your money. So what do? It's called financial education. It's about learning how to and why you're investing in certain things. CDs are basically a boring way to save money. But you're going backwards. So CDs are not a place to hold money for anybody that actually doesn't want to be poor. They're a great way to hold money if you want to plan on being poor when you quote unquote retire. This is the zombie cattle approach to life and investing. Put money into something that'll actually be worth less down the road when you can't actually go make more money. So I think that that's a crazy place to actually think you're investing is CDs. I think it's a great default way that the bankers say, oh, this is good, because they make their fees and they make their bonuses based on how much money they can trap. And you're really not getting anywhere except backwards.
So what are your thoughts on these apps now that you can download on your smartphone that help you invest? I can't think of the name of them offhand. There's so many of them. There's Robinhood. There's like probably five or six that are super popular. I think there's even a couple that some celebrities have invested in because it's kind of a cool thing. What do you think about those?
A lot of what's happening is we're dumbing down the population by giving them a way to click their way into wealth. At least that's what they're told. Click, click, click. And now you own some investments. What you own is a piece of somebody else's thing, meaning they actually own you. You have this app and it's really not worth more than 99 cents. I don't care if you have $1,000 or $100,000 in these things. You don't control it and you're not learning anything. If you go, I think one of them may have been Betterment. I mean, there's just a lot of different ones.
Yeah, there's tons of them.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, and I see some of these, there's one where you can lend, meaning like somebody wants to borrow money and you can put in $25 of a $5,000 loan with 50 of your friends or 50 different random people. And it kind of spreads out the risk. These are all interesting, but there's not really any learning going on. So you're not building a muscle. You're just doing what somebody else is doing. There's a lot of crowd mentality where people are all doing something, but you don't really know why. You don't understand what's going on. And even when you can click, it's something, but I mean, really, what skills are you developing and what muscle are you developing? The problem is people look at work as a four-letter word. Investing and learning, that is work. So what do people do? They go, what app can I download and click away? So I don't think that really pushes us forward. I think that we just get addicted to looking at apps and updates and seeing how much money it's grown to inside this app. But how is that any different than having a brokerage account and being in an S&P 500, watching that roller coaster? It's all a roller coaster. There's no sophistication. There's no control. And you're not growing a muscle. You got to find something different to grow a muscle. And that just takes time and effort. And most people aren't going to do that.
So really, we need to just take ownership of our finances and really figure out what system works best for us and then capitalize on that. Where are some there, you obviously have a huge wealth of resources that people can use, but if they're not able to access you, what are some other ideas and suggestions people can look into as far as like finding an investor? Let's say they inherit money, or I don't know, win the lottery, something crazy like that. What are some ways that they can just start now and looking into places to invest?
I think that one of the smartest things people can do if there's a windfall, whether they have a big inheritance or just making some money, or they just happen to have saved up, is to not tell anybody. I mean, one of the problems is we have money, we get excited, we want to share, and all of a sudden somebody has a great idea for our money, and we and our money become distant relatives all of a sudden. So the first step is not telling people you have money. The second step is going and finding places. Like, I spend a lot of time at seminars, and I go to a thing called The Secrets of Successful Syndicators in Dallas. I go a couple times a year. I teach there, and I'm around people that are of like mind. These are self-responsible people. That is the key. That is the key word. It's being self-responsible and being around those people. So what can you do? Go to the right environment. Most of us aren't naturally going to be around people that are self-responsible. It's not cool to be self-responsible. What's cool is to blame other people, blame the politicians, blame the economy, blame the boss. So being around people that own their lives is probably the single most important thing any person, investor, business owner can do to actually design a life versus having something by default. So I think it's finding those type of places, and you're going to actually be around people, and you're going to start building your own tribe. That's the first thing to do, because it's not meant to be done on our own. We're trained that way, because if you work with somebody else, it's called cheating in school. And in the real world, it's called collaborating. And that's what the value of these different, and I like this better than just online forums and things. I like going where you're actually with people. We're meant to be social and connected, and it's a really powerful thing being in an environment. So is it worth the money? If you have $10,000 and that's it, I would say invest the $10,000 in live events where you're around other people. Go to 3 or 4 of those things. That's the best juice you're ever going to get. It's the best investment you'll ever make. Not in some stock fund or some real estate or rental. It's literally in you. Invest in yourself.
Mm-hmm. So you've started over 30 businesses. What are some of the best practices and lessons learned that you have figured out and put into practice for yourself?
A couple of things right off the bat. One, focus. When I hear somebody that tells me what they're doing, and they say, well, I've got my business, I've also got this thing, I'm selling knives on the side door to door, but I've also got this thing that I'm investing in a real estate thing, and I've got 3 online businesses. I go, what are you focused on? And so they don't have any focus. And so all their channels, they're just basically diffusing energy. And in martial arts, it's kind of like just throwing your arms around versus taking a very direct approach to a punch. One's going to hurt, one's going to be effective, and the other one doesn't matter, and you're just going to annoy people. You're like a fly.
Sure.
Same thing with focus. So focus and then feedback. So the 2 Fs, focus and feedback. Feedback meaning having somebody around you that's balder or grayer than you are, that's been around at least 10 to 20 years longer than you have, that's actually done things. This is where mentors and mastermind groups are so valuable. If you don't have that, you won't be able to see yourself. You won't see yourself screwing up. You're going to miss your blind spots. We can't see them. So those 2 things are critical for anybody investing or with businesses. When I've had businesses that didn't have an accountability partner, board of advisors, board of directors, I made mistake after mistake, and I didn't know until years later because nobody was actually saying, hey, what about this? That's where you need the feedback all the time. And you have to stop. You have to say no. Saying no is the most powerful thing in business because it opens a space to say yes. When you're saying yes to everything, you fill up your space and you're full. So it's about saying no. And how do you do that? You get really clear on the vision of what you're doing, the mission, why it matters, and the values that are driving all your decisions. That will help you say no to almost everything.
Wonderful. So I want to shift gears a little bit from the financial to just you as a personal entrepreneur. There's a stigma with that term in particular, like everybody now is an entrepreneur, everybody is a this or that. What is your approach particularly to being an entrepreneur versus what the standard definition might be?
Well, I think it's just who I am. I mean, being an entrepreneur really just means that you're willing to fall on your face a lot. I mean, an entrepreneur, you go into uncharted territory, you go into places, there's not very much safety and security in the beginning of being an entrepreneur. There's a lot as you grow and you develop the muscles, but like I am the world's worst employee. I got fired from my last job and I was a volunteer on the job. I mean, I was a full-time volunteer for free and I got fired. That's how bad of an employee I am. So once you are an entrepreneur, I think it's really dangerous to go and pretend you can be a good employee, because you want to create. And that's part of being an entrepreneur, is more of an artist with money. I mean, that's kind of what we do. We create stuff, we create value, and we fix things, or we bring things to life that we see that other people can't see. I don't see anything negative about it. What I do see is people that jump off because they think it's cool, and they don't realize how stressful it is. Like, there aren't weekends when you're an entrepreneur, especially in the beginning. I mean, at this point, I've had 43 or 44 companies that I've started, run. A lot of them have failed. They didn't do anything. And it's exhausting. And there's a price you pay if that's the route you're going to take. So it doesn't mean you need to go full time if you're doing something else, but there is a price. And so it's not just fun and games. I've heard this thing, you probably heard this too. People say, oh, you know, all work and no play makes Damien a dull boy. And I just look at them and I go, you don't understand. It's, you don't get being an entrepreneur. There's something, I have to do this, and I actually love it. And that's what, you know, somebody's really an entrepreneur, because they can't wait to get up and create in the morning. They're not going, oh man, I got to go create today. Like, they're really excited about doing it. Mm-hmm. So ask yourself, do you get excited about creating your thing? And if you do, you probably have some entrepreneurial blood in you. And if that sounds terrible and scary, maybe not.
So how do you find work-life balance personally? What is your trick to making it all work?
To me, it's seasons. It's not a, like, on a day-to-day basis. Today, I'll probably work 12 or 13 hours. There will be a time, like I was in Africa with the gorillas, the silverback gorillas, and I went there for about a week. That was not a, there was no work-life balance in the middle of that trip. I was in the middle of the jungle. That was just all exploration. So there's a season. Right now, I'm in the season of creating. So it's 7 days a week all the time with meditation and yoga to give me some type of focus on keeping my body healthy. Other than that, I don't have an 8 to 5, 9 to 5, any of those kind of things. And it's, there is a decision we make about how much time we're going to spend on each thing. I don't have a lot of time that I'm spending with friends. And for a lot of people, they say, well, I need to see my friends every day or every week. I need to talk to my mom every day for 2 hours. I haven't talked to my mom in a month. And these are choices that we have to make. So is there work-life balance? No. It's, but are there seasons? Yeah, there's a season for rejuvenating and replenishing and playing and connecting with people. There's also a time to get stuff done.
Sure. So there is some play, but there's just not a lot of it. You just got to find the balance, right, as far as that goes.
Well, and here's the thing, the question, and a lot of times people aren't willing to ask this question. Are you willing to pay the price now so you can pay any price later? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times we want everything now. Unfortunately, we saw this a lot. Jason Dorsey, the Gen Y guy, talks about this, where a lot of the millennials basically had the mentality that they felt entitled, and they got tagged as the entitled generation that wanted their six-figure starting salary out of college with no experience. And they thought, hey, I want the corner office with that too. That you're not paying a price for that. Because you exist, you're not owed anything. I think the only thing that we're owed is an opportunity and an open, fair playing field. I mean, that's it. And so if you're either going to pay a price now or you're going to pay a price later. I can tell you that paying a price later is called regret. And it's what I learned the last weeks of my father's life, when we had our final conversation. And he looked at me and he said, you know, there were so many things that I wanted to do. And he knew he only had a few weeks left. And that was him sharing regret at a very, very deep, personal, painful level. He was basically warning me. It was not an example to follow. It was a warning that either pay the price early or you're going to pay the price later. The later price is 1,000 times more painful. And I can promise you, you don't want to go there. So pay the price now so that you actually have the choices down the road.
Wow, that's very profound. Because sometimes I feel like we get excited and we have all these ideas, but we never follow through with them, and we just get stuck.
Well, and here's a question: if you're saying, "Well, I think I'm on the right track," I have the litmus test for whether we're on the right track for me. If I see a lot of people, and their first impression is that guy is a crazy person. He literally is getting up before the sun, and he's working, and he's intensely focused, and he forgets to go to the bathroom or have lunch for 2 days. You know, like if there's a bit of a crazy-ish part of your life, that may mean that you're on purpose, that you're paying a price. If you seem like you're really in balance and everything is good, you may or may not be paying the price that you need to have the choices that you're going to want for the rest of your life. And that is something that you really have to ask and be honest about The problem is we lie to ourselves all the time. We're not honest about what's real. And great question to ask, what is true? What is true about your life right now? Are you really focused on anything, or are you just going through motions and living paycheck to paycheck? What are you doing at night? I mean, we all have 168 hours a week. Are you spending your time watching television? I mean, the average person in the United States watches 7 hours of television a day. I don't even know how that's possible, but that is what most people are doing. TVs are on and we're basically sitting there like zombies. So we all have the same amount of time. The question is, what are you doing to invest in your future?
Yeah, there was a YouTube video that Mark Cuban did. I don't know if you saw it. It was like Wired Magazine or something. And they basically asked him to talk about his day and what he does. And honestly, he does a lot, but he doesn't do as much as you might think because he's doing several things at once, or he's just focused and he has a schedule and he has a regiment. And he stays on top of things. And I think, you know, I've heard that too. Oprah has the same amount of hours in a day that you and I have. The question is what are you going to do with it? So I think that's super important. A question that I like to ask all my entrepreneurs, and I don't know if you get this a lot, maybe you do. What is your advice to someone who might be wanting to seek out a mentor like yourself or somebody who wants to seek advice? What is your approach to that, and what can they do maybe with you or just seeking out a mentor in general?
The thing that I have not found in my entire life, I've done it plenty of times with people, is I have not found that people are willing to ask what they can do to serve someone. They tend to show up and say, here's what I want. You're important, or you're smart, or you're successful, and I want your time. Well, I get requests for my time all the time. I get people pinging me online, wanting to talk, and I do as much as I can. But the thing that I notice is they don't say, hey, do you have anything going on that I could help you with? Mm-hmm. You want somebody's time? Go make their life easier. You'll stand out, I guarantee you. And then all of a sudden you become indispensable. And I've seen a lot of people over the years that have connected with very, very high level, very important people, celebrities and just super successful mentors, because they were willing to show up and do a lot of work and help out for free. I mean, even though I got fired as a volunteer, I made some incredible connections because I was willing to show up and give my time. Most people are they're too scarce in their mindset, and they're too greedy. So if you're generous with your time with people and finding problems they have, my friend Russ Gray, the Real Estate Guys radio co-host, did this years ago. And it's one of the reasons that he's very, very connected to amazing people like Robert Kiyosaki and Robert Helms, because he was willing to show up and say, okay, what do you need? Well, and it's not just asking, what does somebody need? You have to go dig, because if somebody says, hey, Damien, what do you need? I may or may not even spend the time addressing it. But if you found a problem you saw me having and you fixed it, guess what? All of a sudden I'm paying attention and I'm asking, hey, you want to spend more time? Like, what can I do for you? So it's taking the initiative. And I that's a missing piece. People are waiting to be told what to do. Like, that's not how the world works. You got to go out there and make it happen.
It's all about bringing value, right? And not just what can I get from you, but what can I give to you to make it worth your time? And I think that's the trick.
It is. It's the same mentality as looking at a fireplace and saying, once you give me heat, I'll give you some wood. Like, that's not how it works. You got to get, put the wood in there, and this is the work you're doing. This is the value you're creating for somebody, and then you get heat. That's how, I mean, that's literally, it's like saying I'm going to ignore gravity because I don't like it. It's too much work. Well, it doesn't matter if you believe it or like it or anything else. It's still there. This is how it works. If you want to connect with mentors, if you want awesome people in your life, find ways to make their life better. It'll come back to you, I promise.
Well, that is awesome. And you've written several books, which you sent me, and I read them. I love them. Thank you so much for doing that. Those are awesome. Where can people find you and learn more about you, get your resources and that sort of thing?
All the resources, the books, DamienLupo.com. And there's a workbook people can get at DamienLupo.com where they can, it's the questions inside of one of my books really to help reinvent your life. And my belief is that you have the answers inside of you if you know what questions to ask. The problem is we don't know what we don't know. So this workbook you can download is going to give you that framework, those questions that you can start with. And what you're going to find is that there's a lot of answers that are just waiting inside you. You don't need a therapist. You may not even need a mentor. You just need the right questions. And then you'll find that you are mentoring yourself if you're willing to listen to the truth.
Again, it comes down to taking responsibility and being an adult and not just expecting everything to be handed to you, which I appreciate your honesty. And thanks. It's been fun. And Damien, all of his information will be available in our show notes when the episode releases. Thanks again, sir, for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
What a fun and fantastic start to 2019. Damien, again, thank you so much. It's been fun hanging out with you. Everybody have a fantastic weekend. Until next time, let somebody know that you love them and let them know that you care. And we'll be back. Cheers.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.